JM and the AM on a Tuesday morning broadcast. Rabbi Chaim Jachter is in our studio. He is rabbi at Congregation Shari Ora, the Sephardic Congregation of Teaneck, and veteran Torah teacher at our beloved Torah Academy of Bergen County. Also serves as dayan on the Beis Din of Elizabeth and has acquired an international reputation of excellence in the area of get and eruv administration. As others have pointed out to me after I announced it this morning, it is hard to believe that he has authored 19 books on issues ranging from contemporary halacha, Tanakh, Agada, and Jewish thought. And the most recent book is entitled Kashrut Unveiled, Unraveling Contemporary Kashrut. Rabbi Chaim Jachter, a pleasure to welcome you back to JM in the AM.
Thank you for having me on the show, Nachum.
I am glad you're here. I can't believe the book is over 450 pages. What does that tell us about kashrus, since the book is over 450 pages?
Before I say anything else, I have to give a shout out to your son, Gavri.
Wow!
Because the last 2 years in TABC, this year as well, but we've been learning kashrus, and your son was a big part of the shiur 2 years ago.
I appreciate that.
And in preparing for those shiurim, this is the book. That's how we were able to get 500 pages, because that was all the shiurim that these boys, they asked so many good questions and added so many great insights. So that's how you have a great sefer like that. All the questions and insights and input from the inspiration from the TABC shiurim.
So what is it that the teenagers are most frustrated with when it comes to kashrus? Is it waiting the 6 hours? Hours? Is that their greatest frustration?
I think the biggest question I get at TABC is that if you had French fries at one of the eateries here.
Correct. One of the many options.
One of the Flasic eateries here, an hour later they want to have pizza.
So correct.
They want to have ice cream.
Does Rabbi Jachter have a standard answer for that question or not? Does it depend
ask your rabbi.
Does it depend on the establishment?
Actually, it does. It depends on how they prepare the French fries. Are they preparing in the same oil where the chicken was fried? That's a big question.
See, that makes sense. Chicken was in that fryer. I mean, you know, you got to be really careful. But if you knew that there were no meat products, or there's no in between, right? There would be no such thing as an in between thing. It would only be actual meat or no meat, right? Those are the two options.
Yeah, but they'd have a separate fryer.
Right.
Then.
Then you don't have to worry at all, right? And do you, I'm a regular balabas. That's how I classify myself. And I'll argue with anybody who says otherwise. So the evolution of that type of restriction always seems to frustrate people like me. And I don't know if it's legitimate. Maybe we shouldn't be frustrated by it. There is no way, as the joke goes, that Moshe Rabbeinu waited 6 hours between meat and milk, correct? It's likely that did not happen. Correct or not correct?
But if Moshe Rabbeinu looks down and sees us waiting the 6 hours, he'll say, that makes sense.
Would he?
Oh, 100%. 100%. Because what the Torah is so much about is, as we say in Rosh Chodesh, Gvul Samta Bal Yavor. This is something we emphasize in the TABC Shiurim all the time. We speak about not just the halacha, but about the hashkafa, that it's the importance of boundaries meat and milk between men and women. It's something that in the world outside today that boundaries are being breached.
Kosher, not kosher.
And it's very, very important that we inculcate in the Jewish home. It permeates the Jewish home, and nothing more does it than milk and meat. Is these boundaries, these firm boundaries that we've set between meat and milk, and it helps us understand the difference between good and bad in a world that has a very hard time understanding the difference between good and bad. And we know very well what we're speaking about.
The distinguishing is impossible these days.
Correct. So Havdalah. It's not just something that we do on Matzai Shabbos. Right. It's a Jew lives Havdalah and knows and understands what it is to differentiate.
Yet you know, as somebody who's a leader in what we'll call for this conversation the modern Orthodox world, just because, you know, nobody likes labels, but at some point you have to identify something for the purpose of conversation. You do know that sometimes those boundaries, restrictions, separations only make it more frustrating, not only for teenagers, but adults as well in the community. So you have to at least acknowledge that there is a sensitive balancing act taking place, no?
But boundaries are the lifeblood of the Jew. And it's something we embrace. It's something that we love. And because it may be difficult in the short term, but in the long run, it brings us an enriched life, a much better life.
So that's really the attitude, that yes, there may be failings along the way, but the general overall picture is only a positive.
Like when I run a business.
Right.
You run a business, it has to be disciplined, you have to have boundaries, personal
learn from your mistakes.
Absolutely.
Right. Because you're not discouraging kids or adults to make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. But learn from them, implement the proper procedures, and move on.
And really take the hashkafa. It's not just the observance of the kashrus. It's also to learn of what we're doing with kashrus and to take it into our whole life and to embrace it and to see how it really elevates us and brings us to best.
So is the reason that this restriction, I know you have a million topics, but you know this is one of the more popular conversations when it comes to kashrus. Mm-hmm. So is it possible that we went all the way to 6 hours? Because just like some people like to go from 6 to 5:59 or to 5:01, the rabbis may have feared that if they do 2 hours, people might go to 1:59 or 1:01 or, you know, that is that
all the line.
Right,
hold
exactly.
The line. We Jews have to, you know, poor Orthodox Jews. Forget about the labels, Orthodox,
right.
Ultra.
So what do you say then about those line. About hold those who sometimes adjust to less than 6 hours?
Doesn't last. Doesn't
wow.
last.
And is there such a thing as this is obviously an important Shabbos topic. Is there such a thing as waiting from one meal to the next? In other words, if it's time for Shalosh Shudas, is there any leniency for having dairy, or it's got to be
hold the line?
It's got to be six
hold
hours.
Hold the line. 6 hours.
Oh.
Hold the line.
So you're even with the tough restrictions, you still put together 450 pages.
I love it. And the most important thing is that we should embrace it and love it. We shouldn't fight it emotionally. We should love it. We should love it.
So when you get that French fry question, you're not happy with it because you're sort of saying to yourself, you know what, guys, this is the rule. And, you know, you should certainly try to, you know, adjust. As you would say, adjust accordingly. You know that this.
Well,
is
with a French fry question, it's not so simple. That's right. Already more of a gray matter.
Right.
It's one could say, well, the French fries are not being put in the chicken oil there deliberately to give it a taste of the chicken. It's just they're out of convenience for the stores. Just say they happen to be right. in the same place. They have to make things so very, very fast and very, very quickly and very little space. So it may not require the 6 hours. Most of the Rabbanim seem to require that there should be still wait 6 hours. There are those who are lenient. You feel the situation out and you have to get the reality and you work from there.
Same rules with the potato kugel? Same thing, right? Depending on whether there's real meat or not.
Depends.
And how it's prepared.
Depends,
and what
depends,
type of oven it's prepared.
Depends. Cetera, the details. We love details. We love
right.
details.
I knew I'd meet somebody who loves the details.
Love
and you're,
the,
and you're the man.
We love the details. In sports. In sports. We love the details in sports. So we love. I can name, I think of it as a kid, I can name from the 1972 Dolphins, I can name every single.
The whole roster.
The whole roster. Even to the third string quarterback.
You remember
Don
Paul
Strunk.
Warfield.
Poor Warfield. It was excellent. Ward with a wide receiver, number 10.
So if that's the case,
that's
you're
right.
saying you should know all the details
absolutely.
Of this.
Absolutely. We love it. You love it.
Why do you think the rabbis didn't do the reverse, that after dairy, one should wait a number, whatever the number of hours would be until eating meat? Why do you think that's the case?
It's part of the Havdalah. Part to know the differences. There's differences, and we're always thinking. Part of what kashrus does, brachos, what halacha does, it makes us think. Think. You don't just live life by rote. You're not living life by instinct, but you're thinking before you're doing. And that's why we learn halacha, to make us think, to make us thoughtful individuals, alert, aware, and that elevates
so
us.
So why so much more strict on one procedure than the other?
One has more impact.
The meat on the body.
The meat has more impact.
Right, wow. Interesting. Rabbi Chaim Jachter's here. The book is called Kashrut Unveiled. I'm assuming it's available everywhere at this point.
Well, if you say Amazon is everywhere, then Amazon is everywhere.
That's the way it seems to be these days. Plus, I can tell you it's in some of the local establishments as well, so people could take advantage of that. All right, so there were others that I wanted to ask you about because, as I said earlier, there are some detailed questions that are, you know, very technical. A lot of the... you know, meat spoon in a dairy pot, you know, the different, you know, and then there are, of course, the ones that are most prominent on our minds, like, do we really have to wait 6 hours, et cetera. Now, if, in fact, there are some people that wait 1 hour legitimately, according to halacha, what would you say about that?
Oh, I know what I say about that. We have,
you say
we
lucky
have a few
duck?
Boys.
Is that
no,
what you
no,
say?
No. We say we. I say to them, they should, to the boys. We've had some boys in TABC who are Dutch. So and one of them I spoke at his bar mitzvah. They're associate members of our shul. So I said they have to bolt the door down because when it comes time for shiduchim, you know that.
That's right. That's right. They're all going to want to marry into that family.
Everyone wants to marry him.
I love it. That's great.
One of the boys actually married a vegan, you know, because he wanted to make sure that she's not marrying for her ulterior motives.
Oh, is that funny? So I went to high school with someone from Holland.
Yeah.
And that was the whole thing. You know, Shabbos afternoon, an hour later, this guy was all set while the rest of us were waiting till nightfall before we could eat anything, you know. But again, because it's rooted in halacha, you would say it's a legitimate halacha
position. And tradition that's connected, right. Connect to the past, rooted in the past.
So what do you say about traditions that are not rooted in halachic sources? 3 hours, 4 hours, into the sixth hour, et cetera.
3 hours if you're a German Jew.
Right. Although
you have to be a legitimate German Jew.
Right, but we don't see that in halachic works, do we?
Is it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, do we?
Absolutely.
I didn't realize
absolutely.
That. I thought 1 and 6 were the only ones that we really...
No, Rabbeinu Yerucham. It's one of the Rishonim, yeah.
And is there a 4 that's written about, or any others besides the 1, 3, and 6, since we're on the topic?
Maybe the 5.
There might be a 5.
You like this topic.
I think I like the topic because I think it's what everybody wants to hear. You know, Taruvus is nice, but come on, Rabbi Jackner. This is the one that everybody wants to hear about.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
So 5 might be legit.
Let me tell you what I think about 5.
Uh-huh.
I love Rav Soloveitchik. I was one of his shamashim, one of his attendants, and but he did actually believe that five hours in a tick, that was his opinion. But I would say like this, but we have traditions. If you're an East European Jew, 6 hours. If you're a Sephardic Jew, let's give a shout out to Sephardic Jews and the Rabbi of Sephardic congregation.
For how many years are you there?
I'm there 25 years.
Wow. So you know all the traditions.
Thank God. Well, I'm still learning. Every single day is a learning experience with Sfaradim, especially ours. We have a big, big mix. So it's every day there's more to learn.
You have Jews with roots in many other countries?
19 different countries.
Seriously?
Absolutely.
Syria, Lebanon?
You name it.
Really?
Yes.
All right. So now let's go to another one of my favorite topics.
Yes.
Okay. When one is in a kashrus situation that they are not in control of.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you entitle one of your chapters or one of your topics, a Baal Tshuva, trusting their mother's kashrus. Now, when I saw this topic, when I saw this heading, I said to myself, you know, I've heard that there are halachic sources that in Israel, no secret, but many people, frankly, outside of Israel may just not be familiar with it. When there are issues of the Shemitah year, right? So there are different ways of handling it. There are people who will make sure not to get any produce from Jewish owners. There are those who, you know, make adjustments somewhat along that way. And then, of course, there's the very famous, what we call the Heter Mechira, that people will rely on. And again, consult with your local rabbi if you want details, or read the book if it's in there. And people rely on that. Very often, someone will visit a relative, and they'll be hesitant to eat the chicken that they're serving because it's kosher, but it's not kosher to quote unquote their standard. They'll hesitate to eat the salad because they know that that relative of theirs relies on the Heter Mechira. And I think that sort of fits into the question of the Baal Tshuva eating at a parent who's trying to accommodate them kosherous wise. What do you say about that?
Okay, I say one thing.
Go ahead.
What's the difference between a rabbi and a lawyer? The lawyer charges you $500, $600
an hour. Right?
The rabbi's for free. So that's why the rabbi loves getting questions. Call the rabbi. People begin a conversation with rabbis saying, I'm sorry to bother you, rabbi, but I have a question.
Right.
No, you're not bothering the rabbi. Every rabbi loves getting questions.
But you have addressed this.
To become better askers.
That's why you addressed it?
Absolutely.
So if someone read this book, they wouldn't be able to come up with an answer to my question.
Yeah, they'd be able to ask more questions and better questions.
They'd understand their own question better.
That's right.
And that includes, by the way, I love your approach, although it's frustrating. That includes, by the way, glatt kosher meat as opposed to Beit Yosef meat, which you're very familiar with because of the Sephardic tradition.
Oh, boy, yeah.
There was a famous case in modern Jewish history where were young men who were coming from Iran.
Oh.
Right? Am I right about this?
Yeah.
They had to actually do Hataras Nedarim. Again, I'm not going to go into it right now, but they had to disavow their vow to keep their understood vow, to keep the family tradition of Beit Yosef, because that type of meat was not available where they were in yeshiva, and they would eat standard, you know, meat shechted and prepared by standard kashrus guidelines. So there are adjustments that can be made, right, in the area of hashgacha.
The most important thing that every Jew needs to know is the number of their rabbi.
And you won't
and now
stop.
It's so easy. WhatsApp, one-stop shopping. WhatsApp, text. Just rabbis are thrilled to receive your question.
But when you hear of a historical case like that, if you were to give an opinion about it, you would say that the rabbis likely handled it in the proper fashion, right? The students went to the rabbi, they asked what to do, and they were told this is the procedure you should go through.
One of the most fascinating things is really to see the range of opinions and to understand, you know, the Sephardic tradition, the Yemenite tradition, the Ashkenazi tradition. So it's really, really just fascinating to see the full range. And that's what I try to do in the Sefer. By the way, you notice I dodged the question.
Well, of course you dodged the question. I can't even ask you now about somebody eating at their relative who holds by the Heter Mechira. Although I think, isn't there something in Kashrus? Am I right that there is a concept of making yourself a drop more lenient if it means keeping peace, you know, between one and the other?
Well, I'll just say one thing. It does go two ways, that the host also should be a good sport and should be flexible and understand if you have a host, if you have your guest that's a little bit more strict than you are, you know, work with them.
Are there times the guest should be you?
Maybe.
Depending on the rabbi.
Maybe. Well, depending on the situation.
What do you do? Are there, and you have a whole chapter on medicine. Are there non-kosher medicines? Are there plenty, meaning, are there a lot of non-kosher medicines out there, or really 99% will not contain anything of kosher?
So the big problem is glycerin. Glycerin is
an actual treif product.
Well, you don't know. Because glycerin can either come from an animal source, it can come from a plant source, and you'll never know. And that's always a big question mark when it comes to medicine. So there are different approaches to it. Right. What happens if the medicine doesn't taste particularly good? Is it something that you have to be concerned with, not be concerned with? So there's a full
swallowing
range.
It whole helps.
Exactly,
or?
It does. There's a full range of opinions.
And need, I guess, helps also.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, we're talking about medicine. Absolutely. In some cases, you know, a doctor may say it's a life and death situation.
Absolutely. Well, life and death situation, there should be no hesitation.
Right.
But the questions, the Robitussins, the question of the small, I have a cold, the child has a cold. Right. What should they do?
What do you say about, because you write about kitnios on Pesach in your book, what do you say about the effort in Israel that because so much of the population now will eat kitnios on Pesach, that really the whole country, therefore, should be able to make that adjustment and have kitnios in their home on Pesach?
If an Ashkenazi wants to have kitnios in their home on Pesach, so I recommend them to come to a Sephardic shul on Rosh Chodesh Elul. Spend all Chodesh Seyo Slicho. Wake up every morning at 4:45.
That bowl of rice, maybe? That bowl of rice comes at a big price, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Say the least. So your point, of course, being if you're in that tradition, it would make sense.
If you're an Ashkenazi, you're an Ashkenazi.
But I like the effort being made to turn the whole state of Israel to kitniot. I don't know.
Let them become all Sfaradim. They want to be all Sfaradim fans.
Well, the argument is that because the population is majority Sfaradim, that essentially they could all follow that tradition.
Why only that tradition? They should follow all the traditions, and they should only have Beit Yosef, and then they should be
get up at 5 a.m. in Elul.
Get up 5 a.m. in Elul and...
You're being very unreasonable, Rabbi Jack.
Sorry. Sorry.
Let's see what else we had here. So I didn't even realize that, and again, I apologize to the audience if anyone's not familiar with these terms, but for those who are, I think they'll appreciate it. You talk about chadash, and we have a whole, if someone walks into a kosher pizza shop in this area, certainly, it's going to be known and advertise that they serve kemach yashan as opposed to chadash, right? That's become almost a standard, would you say, in the majority of restaurants? Or
it depends where you are.
So not every neighborhood has it.
Not every neighborhood has it. But the Sephardic neighborhood's interesting. I think in Queens, it's you'll find it much more popular, especially in certain parts of Brooklyn. It'll be very popular. It depends if it's a heavily concentrated Sephardic community.
And they will only eat Yashin at home as well, I assume.
It depends on the more strict the Sephardim will.
Wow, I didn't even realize that the general population was familiar with the restriction of not that one should not eat chadash and they should only eat yashan. Like the restaurants are doing it because obviously, you know, it pays to accommodate as many people as possible. I didn't realize in homes in this area or, you know, in general in the diaspora, they're even familiar with the custom or with the halachic requirement, I should say.
It's a very interesting issue. Ashkenazim have at least a 1,000-year tradition to be lenient about this matter. The question is today, it's a little bit easier to be strict about it. So they say, well, maybe today we should all become stricter. So that's already a debate. I would say, let's say I'm in Teaneck. In Teaneck, most people are lenient about this. But in other communities, especially in the Sephardic communities, there are those who are more strict.
And it's a biblical commandment.
Absolutely.
Which makes it even, there are not that many biblical commandments that we just, you know, toss aside.
Correct. It's a biblical commandment on one hand. On the other hand, it is at least a 1,000-year tradition to be lenient, at least for Ashkenazim.
Right. Interesting. You speak about the canned tuna debate. Now, that's a debate that's going on for decades, correct? Or
yes.
Is the debate not going on for decades, just the issue has been out there for decades?
The issue has been out there. I think the OU won hands down on this issue.
Oh, so
hands, in my humble opinion, right. I'll be lenient about one thing. the tuna fish, I think the OU wins hands down. But it's a very fascinating topic because the companies work very hard to make sure it's only tuna.
Right.
And the even those who take the stricter approach have never found, this is what the OU reports, they've never found a non-kosher tuna in the plants because the plant because the companies themselves are very, very strict, very, very disciplined in their system.
That having been said, and I think you know what I'm about to say, that having been said, if you just said what you said about tuna and if we are going to accept the decision of Torah giants in the history of modern United States communities that one likely does not have to be extra careful about Chol of Yisrael because the procedure of supervising milk in this country almost makes it equal to the goal of Chol of Yisrael. Are we willing to establish that or not?
Okay. Can I be a little radical? Is it
100%.
Okay to be a little radical?
100%.
Okay. In my opinion, and I've run this through other rabbis as well, I think the lenient approach to Chol of Yisrael is becoming more and more compelling. Why? Because the prohibition is only, we'll pay attention to the language of the Mishnah, it says, Chol of Shechel Bo Akum.
Right.
It's only milk that a non-Jew milked.
Right.
But today, how's the milk being milked?
Machines, I guess.
Robotics.
Right.
Robotics, more and more farms.
Jewish robots?
Are converted. They're not non-Jewish robots, so it's the technicality is not right there. So besides the government supervision, which is strict,
right,
the OU did a survey of the USDA. They're very, very strict. In non-kosher milk in the United States, you can only get, pig milk is not sold. It's not commercially available anywhere. Camel right milk is available. Donkey milk is available, but extremely expensive. There's no chances is going to be non-kosher milk in the general milk supply.
I have to let you go in a minute, but I just want to finish this question. And if I make you a drop late for TABC, I apologize and send our best regards to everyone there. If you're going to then establish that Chol of Yisrael is as you just described in this country, the issue of Chol of Yisrael is as you just described in this country, and you're going to establish that no major tuna fish company is ever going to allow a non-kosher fish, right? I mean, you know, Bederach HaTeva are not going to allow a non-kosher fish in their tuna cans. If you're willing to agree to those two things, wouldn't Rabbi Jachter also agree that there is no major company in this country that would allow bugs in their vegetables?
Okay, this is a good topic to end off on. Okay, one more leniency. I started off holding the line with the 6 hours. So my tradition from my Rebbeim, and I know this is a hotly debated issue. Another is that what if you have the triple washed from an American's domestic high quality, it looks fresh under very simple under very specific circumstances, we'd be lenient. To me, the biggest authority when it comes to insects is my wife, my wife Malka.
What does she say?
She knows how to handle. So she's very, very particular as it comes to it. Non-organic, and is from a very high quality, from a well-known company, from a brand name, and it says triple washed. Then even if it doesn't have hashgacha, in the Jachter family, we're lenient. Now, the major kashrus organizations are all strict about this. Right. I want to be straight out. However, I know Rabbi Willig is Rabbi Bush. They're both lenient about this, and I find it very, very compelling. But you have to be very, very careful. You have to look and see, does it look fresh? Then there's
is there any fruit or vegetable not allowed in your home?
Lots.
Seriously?
Yeah, we're my wife's afraid of the berries that are
really
the open berries. Right. If it's closed, like a blueberry, she's lenient about it. But the strawberry, she's okay. She just cut off the top and then wash it in a strong stream. But raspberries, she's scared of that because it has the pockets. And so she just doesn't allow it.
Tell your wife that when I was back in high school, and we would ask our Rebbe, who was also our dorm counselor, Kasha's questions, his answer usually was, call your mother.
That's right. No greater authority than the Jewish homemaker and the Jewish Rebbetzin.
I
could throw in one last idea. We have a chapter, and this is also we developed this at TABC. We have a chapter on why most kashrus questions begin with the following. My husband entered the kitchen. My son entered the kitchen. So I frame the question the following, that you're not asking the right question. You have to learn how to ask the way I say on TBC all the time. You have to ask the right question. There's no other ask question. The question is not why do men mess up so frequently. It's why women don't mess up so frequently. Oh. And the reason why, I think, the reason why women don't do such a great job with kashrut, it's amazing. First of all, Hashem gives women bina yaseira. It gives them the added wisdom.
Added instinct, right?
Correct.
And wisdom.
It's unbelievable. And also there, the women are the source of the holiness of the Kedusha in our families. And as a result of that great, the Kedusha that Hashem gives them, that they give to the family, that Hashem gives them that this ability, this almost supernatural ability to run a house in an unbelievable way. It's normal to make mistakes with kashrus. The fact that women do it so infrequently is really min hashamayim, the great help that Hashem does. He gives to the Jewish women that they bring the holiness into
so
the
house. So it's not that we relegate women to the kitchen. We don't trust ourselves to go into the kitchen.
Oh, no.
That's the essence of it. Yeah, and you don't have to name any names. You have any superstar students this year in TABC?
Superstar students in TABC, every one of them.
Yeah, I get that. But it must give you tremendous nachas when some of them ask you brilliant questions.
Well, I'll tell you, to be honest, we love all the Talmidim, but when I see with the most happy occasion as a Rebbe is to go to a wedding of a Talmid who marry, they marry a Bas Torah, seeing them as a Ben Torah. That's a Bas Torah. So that's my, as a Rebbe, that's the happiest moment to go. The brisses, the pidgin, but you know, the simchas, and they're seeing the ongoing, continuing the Masorah and the tradition. There's nothing.
You're there how many years?
I'm there 30 years.
And amazing that we know each other from our youth, and you end up being a key Rebbe in our meaning my wife and I, son's lives. So kol hakavod to you and everybody there, and mazal tov on the book. 19 books. What does it feel after 19? Like, you know, no big deal at this point? Or each one is still extra special when it comes out?
Time to write number 20.
Yes, you can't stop now. No. You got to at least get to an even 20.
Absolutely.
The book is called Kashrut Unveiled, Unraveling Contemporary Kashrut. Rabbi Chaim Jachter is the author. You can get it on Amazon, get it in some of the local stores. When you see the ad in the paper, you'll see a QR code where you can order it as well. Wishing you the best of luck always.
Thank you, Nachum.
A pleasure. Happy Chanukah to you.
Thank you.
Now before Rabbi Jachter walks out of our studio to head to TABC, I wanted to mention one more thing, and I'm glad he's still here. Project Ezra, which is amazing, and he'll tell us in a minute, what Project Ezra does from his perspective is having their 23rd annual dinner on Saturday night, December the 14th. That's this coming Motzei Shabbos. Project Ezra is worth supporting, and again, we'll turn to Rabbi Jachter in a moment to tell us why. But Risa Krohn, Jay Gutman, Chaya and Shaya Birnbaum, and Rebbetzin Malka, or I should say Rabbanit Malka, I guess, in your congregation, and Rabbi Chaim Jachter are being honored at the 23rd annual dinner for Project Ezra this coming Saturday night. We're encouraging everybody to support the cause and certainly pay tribute to the Jachters and the other honorees. It's happening at Keter Torah in Teaneck this coming Saturday night, and there is a web address to RSVP and support the cause, Ezra.org/dinner, EZRAH.org/dinner. Rabbi Jachter, before you leave, tell us why Project Ezra, for all these years, already the 23rd dinner, is a project worth supporting.
Project Ezra is not your typical tzedakah. It's not a handout. It's a hand up. It's the most effective way to give tzedakah, because what you're doing is you're not just giving a person, helping them buy money for a meal for the immediate need, but you're taking care of a family. You're lifting up. You're uplifting a family. And our limited budgets that we have to give to help those people in financial needs, this is the most effective dollar for dollar the way to allocate that money.
And they essentially do this by helping people arrange financial strategies to move forward, and as you said,
absolutely,
not just eat for today, but Bezrat Hashem, be in a peaceful situation financially,
absolutely,
down the road.
Self-sustaining,
right,
bring them up.
And they have advisors and staff that helps people,
absolutely,
do this. And I'm sure as a rabbi of a congregation, you've seen,
absolutely,
success many, many times.
I've seen that. That's absolutely, absolutely.
So they've chosen you and your wife as guests of honor this coming Saturday night. And I'm sure you're accepting this award with tremendous humility and with tremendous joy.
Project Ezra is a great organization.
Pay tribute to the Jachters, to the Birnbaums, to Jay Gutman and Risa Krohn. Mazal tov to all of them for being recognized this coming Saturday night. Dinner at Keter Torah in Teaneck to support Project Ezra. If you're not familiar with it, or if you want to get more information about the dinner, go to Ezra.org, EZRAH.org/dinner for information. I appreciate you tossing in some positive words about Project Ezra.
Thank you, Noah.
And mazal tov on the honor.
Thank you.
More coming up. It's a Tuesday morning broadcast at America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listener-sponsored digital radio. Around the world, the web at NahumSiegel.com and the Nahum Siegel Network, and of course, the beloved NSN app.